This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Well, good morning. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it is the beginning of day three. We just finished the stage competition here at Abbott's get-together, and I'm here with one of the people who was in the opening act on Wednesday night. This is Clemens Eligner.
Yes,
I got it.
Perfect.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah.
Almost perfect.
Yeah.
First time. Okay. Yeah, my German is, I don't have German, so I can't even say it's as bad because I don't have any. Except I can say nein and ein Bier.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand.
And so you, is this your first time of coming over actually to the get together?
To Abbott's, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
my How
first
you liking
time.
It?
Yeah, I like it very much.
Yeah.
Gene Anderson told me before.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said it's quite different than other conventions.
And
it is. But it's nice because the people are nice. You have enough time to chat with other people, mm-hmm. hang out with them. You don't will miss anything because everything is put in the right order. You can have enough time to stay at the dealer booth.
Yeah.
You can see all the shows, the lectures, mm-hmm. and even have time to hang out with the magicians here.
That's which, nice. You know, I think is kind of interesting because that you might think that at most conventions where you have everything like in the same hotel, like for an example, when we're at 4F, that it's all right there, you know, in that Batavia Holiday Inn place. And here, it's the whole town. You have to walk blocks, you know, to get from one place to the other. So you'd think you wouldn't have enough time because you got to get to someplace else. But it seems that the schedule allows you to have enough time between things to get to wherever
yes.
you want to go.
Yes.
And while you're walking on the street, you run into people and you got time to chat with them while you're walking, you know, and everything
yes,
then
yes,
too.
Yes. Yeah, I like so. That very much. I like also that the whole town is involved.
Yes.
Yes. Also, the people who are not magicians in the town are involved. They are
yeah.
talking to you on the streets because you have your badge on it or they went to the show.
Yeah.
I think this is a great thing, too, that they have this mixed audience in mm-hmm. the evening, not mm-hmm. only magicians.
Right.
A lot of conventions, you pay a lot to come in.
That's right.
And then they are only magicians. That is nice, too.
Yeah.
But then you often times find acts who build on that. So do mm-hmm. magicians jokes, expose something or something
right,
like
right,
that.
Right.
But this is the real audience here.
That's right. And so you get genuine reactions.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And because people do come from all around. Well, in speaking of the town kind of coming out now, magic festivals is not something that we have in the U.S. Now, they do have them in Europe, and I assume in Germany. Have you attended other magic festivals? I mean, where they have
yes,
things?
Yes. We have some festivals, too, like Bamberg Zaubert. It's like in Bamberg. It's a
okay.
magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a street magic festival like that.
Okay.
And there are also a lot of people from the town attending and watching, and they are the audience.
Yeah.
But we have also a lot of conventions, the typical conventions with
sure.
lectures, shows, competitions, and like that.
Now, in Germany, how many people would attend? I mean, typically over here, for an example, this has, what, I don't know, I haven't heard any numbers, but I'm going to guess probably 200 or so people
yeah.
over here. But
it depends on which convention it is.
We have close-up or stage, or even type of...
Oh, no, we are mixing all that
okay.
stuff up. We have this main convention every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's the German championship, kind of, so we have the competition there.
And those championships determine who's going to be going on to FISM.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And there will be about 600 to 700 attendees.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good size.
Yes. But it's only every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very big.
Like FISM.
Big,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that. So we build up like we have two or three smaller conventions a year mm-hmm. in a year. Where we have some, yeah, I don't know the English words, it's like the pre-round to the German Championship.
Okay.
You have to go through this
mm-hmm.
to...
We call them preliminaries.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And then you are able to go to the finals.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So, and those smaller conventions are maybe 200 people
mm-hmm.
each. And then at least the next year is a German Championship and everybody comes together there. But then there are some special conventions. There are some dealers who made convention. You might have heard of those famous Magic Hands conventions.
Sure, of course. Fact Congress?
Yes,
was, okay.
yes, yes. It's but it's
Manfred Tum
20.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They stopped that. But there's a guy in north of Germany who does a nice convention, and he's limited to 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
So
Because after the size 200, of the venue.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Well, that was the reason that the 4F convention, I think, originally was small, because there was only so much room when we used to have at the Forks Hotel back whenever that could get upstairs and see everything. We didn't have TV monitors and everything, you know, way back then either as well. And so just explore a little bit about conventions. It seems like over here that I've heard people say, well, there are too many conventions and everything. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a lot of conventions then in Germany in particular? I mean, I know that you have contiguous countries around, whether it be in Italy and every place else, but as far as just German conventions, how many German conventions, magic conventions, would you say they have annually? I mean, three, four, six, 12? I mean, a lot?
No, I think there are up to 5 major conventions a year.
Mm-hmm.
But they are almost they are small,
mm-hmm.
in little towns, and they are 150 to 200 people or so,
mm-hmm.
and there's only this big convention every 3 years.
Okay. Do you find that there's a difference between German magic and American magic? And I'm going to throw mentalism in there also, since that's what you do so well.
Yes. I think there are a lot of differences. How much time we have? It's difficult to say because my English is not so good to tell what I think. I think we are influenced by all this stuff we get right now from illusionists and something like that.
Yeah.
Because all the younger guys who start doing magic, they learn from internet, from YouTube. They see something like that. Mm-hmm. And I heard a friend of mine has a magic shop in Berlin. And he said he always had to have all those new stuff because all the younger people want to buy it and want to see it. So, so there's a big influence, I think, coming from there.
Coming from the internet.
From the internet, but I think it's an U.S. thing mainly.
It is.
It's he has to have this stuff for the younger people.
Yeah.
In comparison, the stand-up and stage magic, we had. This guy, Eberhard Riese, who is the president of our magic circle,
mm-hmm.
and he wrote a book about how to develop an act to be unique and how to be, how modern stage act should look like.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think he influenced a lot of people with that.
Yeah.
And to do not the old stuff we all have in our cupboards,
mm-hmm.
To change it. Like, for example, you have an egg bag, but now you do it like with a little towel and a piece of soap.
Okay.
Instead of an egg bag and an egg.
Okay.
Or, something like that. And I think we have a lot of stage acts,
mm-hmm.
And competition acts who try to bring something new. They are old tricks,
yes,
at least, mm-hmm. but in a new costume.
I can see that, because I'm thinking of the Furtigen finger flingers, guys, who some of you, if you have not heard of them, you need to go and look them up. I'm mispronouncing that horribly.
Flicking fingers. In German, it's die fertigen Finger.
Which means baby or something? What?
No, fertig means at least they are ready. They are.
Oh, okay.
So I think they have ready fingers. They have trained fingers, so something like that.
Yeah, Thomas Fraps and some of the other guys.
Jörg Alexander, Gaston. Yeah.
Were you part of this group at any point? Or because they have somebody who does mentalism then also as part of their group. I can't remember which one of the fellows.
Nikolai Friedrich?
Nikolai, yes.
He sold this famous puzzle trick to David Copperfield with the Mona Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
That was his original trick. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you were doing some mentalism the night, and I've seen you. I'm always amazed. I never had a chance to talk with you really at Vectors about, afterwards said, that was good. And then the next year you do something else, that was good too.
Thank you.
You fool me. And I know a lot of mentalism. So I think you do a very good job. But I was also equally, if not more impressed, even by your musical talent. Now, because I used to play a cornet.
You played
a trumpet, actually.
Yeah.
Have since I was in grade school, and I played, in the band, and then when I was in college I played in the jazz band for a while, and I always been influenced by music.
Yeah.
Fascinates me. But anyhow, that you look like you were classically trained, you know, as a concert trumpetist.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
really?
It's my main profession.
That's your profession. So
yes.
You do play. Okay,
yes,
so that's not like something you just do kind of on the side. That's your job.
No. I have a full-time job in a German symphony orchestra.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you guys travel all over Germany or the country or the world?
Not that much, because we are a symphony orchestra and opera house, mm-hmm. and we have a huge stage and a huge orchestra pit. Mm-hmm. So our productions, like the operas, are fit to our stage, mm-hmm. and it's too much effort to travel with a production of an opera. Everything you have on stage must be fit your stage, and you never find a stage like that.
Wagner type of stuff that you're going
to have. I went with the Munich State Opera to Japan for a tour for 2 weeks, and we did Lohengrin by Wagner, and they had almost 500 people traveling with us, because there were 100 people in the orchestra and 80 people in the choir and the soloists and so on. But they are the technicians were 250 people, so it was amazing. Yeah.
Wow, that must be quite a production.
Yeah, and it's very expensive, and so we stay almost in our theater, but we travel with concerts to Amsterdam to Concertgebouw, mm-hmm. or something like that.
So when and where do you get an opportunity to perform over in Germany? I mean, I assume,
As a magician. I start doing magic.
And that gets to be confusing, a musician versus a magician.
Magician. Yes, yeah. Something like that. No, I started doing magic and trumpet and music at the same time when mm-hmm. I was 9 years old.
Hmm.
So I started doing magic for kid shows, because I had a lot of, I have brothers and sisters, so I did it there, and then in the kindergarten and the school and stuff like that. But when I studied music, I joined the magic club in Berlin,
mm-hmm.
and one guy owned a little theater, a variety theater, mm-hmm. and Ted Leslie was performing there.
I remember Ted.
Yeah. And he was also a member of our club. And this guy asked me, Ted is not that healthy anymore,
right?
And he needs some support. Mm-hmm. If he felt bad in the evening, mm-hmm. there must be somebody who can fill in for him.
Yeah.
So what about you do the close-up thing before the show? And if Ted is not feeling that good, you can fill in. So I did this for over 4 years.
Yeah.
And there I learned stand-up magic, doing it in a little theater. And I learned a lot by Ted, mm-hmm. and the other guys. And so that was when I started a part-time professional magic career. Mm-hmm. And now I do it for private parties like weddings and corporate events.
Right.
Yeah.
Like we do over here in the U.S. I mean, the same types of venues and everything. Now, Ted Leslie, speaking of him, just a wonderful gentleman, and of course his book, A Pair of Miracles, I would highly recommend to anyone who is thinking about getting into mentalism. It's kind of like he was the Bob Cassidy of Germany to me. I mean, you know, he's just a very intelligent thinker. Bill Palmer is from Houston, and he's one that had interpreted a lot of his books over into English. And when Ted came ill, and he went over, came over for some treatment in Houston. So he came over quite frequently, it seems, you know, here. And so I got a chance to go out to have lunch with him and Bill Palmer, some of the guys, every once in a while when he would be in town.
Bill Palmer was a good friend of Ted.
And
the interesting thing, Ted was a mentalist, but he was influenced by Billy McComb, Danny Ray. He was a big friend and fan of Danny Ray. Ken Brook, and so mm-hmm. so he liked the classic stand-up magicians.
Danny Ray,
a French stand-up magician.
D-A-N-Y.
And so he was influenced by them very mm-hmm. much, and of course Ted always did his cabaret act mm-hmm. at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
He did two sets, one mental set and one classic cabaret act, where he did the card's word and the card on string and something like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, I still will occasionally put in my show one of his things from Pair of Miracles. I can't remember the name of it. And you might remind me then, Clemens. It's the one in which that someone just, you know, names a card basically, and then you give them a deck of cards. They count down, that card is missing, and that's the only one.
Premonition. Yeah.
That is an awesome trick, you know, that you can, and I learned from him that you can do that in a theater of thousands with just a deck of cards, and everybody understands what happens.
Yes. I think this is from Eddie Joseph, I think, original.
I believe you're right.
Yes, but Ted has some clever things, because in this trick you have to do some calculation, right. and Ted got it, right. How it's more easy to do.
So was it mentalism, you do sleight of hand and close-up and everything, you know, as well, but do you have more of a passion for mentalism? Do you like that? Or do you have anything in particular you like? Or you just kind of go in waves? I mean, you like this, and then you kind of go down a different road, and then you like something different?
Yes. I think I like mentalism a lot, but I also like stand-up and close-up magic.
Yeah.
And I don't like to... I don't know the word, distract or take... took those fields as single fields. I like to mix it up. I always did... Yeah. Mentalism in my normal stand-up act, as well as tricks. I love tricks with fluid and something like that. I did a lot liquids. Of things, liquids, yes. And so I do not mentalism, I think I do mental magic.
There's a difference.
Because I do a prediction with the songs and music and musician and something like that. Mm-hmm. But I also produce almost a trumpet or... Yeah, I combine magic and mental.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I missed your lecture the other day. I was playing in the golf tournament, yours was the first lecture out of the chute.
Yes, yes.
Over there. That what types of things? Was it close-up and everything, stand-up? And what
It's a mixture from close-up and stand-up. The thing is, the topic on my lecture is principles. Mm-hmm. And as I told you before, is I started doing magic and trumpet at the same time.
Yeah.
And in Germany, for example, you have music schools, and it's very easy to get a teacher for trumpet, for example. Mm-hmm. But there were no magic schools, teachers.
Yeah. No Hogwarts in Germany.
Yes, yes. So I started doing music very professional, because I had a teacher, a lesson, one by one lesson every week for 1 hour, but no magic teacher. So. Later, I developed that when I studied music in Berlin and the University of Arts, we learned how musicians, professional musicians, will practice.
Yeah.
Because it's you don't have enough time to practice a Wagner opera or so, because it takes 4 hours of playing.
Good point.
You have very strictly when you practice, you have to look where are the difficult things and so on. Mm-hmm. So I tried to take those techniques and use it for magic. And the interesting thing, this is not new, this is a very old principle, like Roy Benson wrote in his great sponge ball and cup routine, Benson Bowl. He described his vanishing move for the sponge ball. You should practice it like in a piece of music, like in a bar of four beats. For the first beat, you put the ball into your hand. For the second beat, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so I train this with a metronome. So I put a metronome, and so I can check if my timing is perfect. So, or if you have a very difficult piece to play with a trumpet, you should take apart the difficult piece into little small pieces who are more easy to play. And then put it together again.
Yeah.
You can do this with a silent Mora Divern and one spin vanish. So I show something like that, how you can practice difficult methods of magic.
It's interesting that I was going to put that word in your mouth of using a metronome, because I was doing a podcast with Fielding West some time ago, and he was talking about using a metronome whenever that he teaches his students in order to get the rhythm of your beats when you are delivering a joke. So this way that when you say something, then you wait till the tick-tock, to allow people to understand it and to sink in and to applaud before that you go to the next line of whatever you're saying.
Yeah.
So it's not just in the performance of it and the slights you're doing, as you're saying there, but also just in the delivery of what you're saying, you know, your presentation, your patter, basically. But I like what you're saying. I hadn't thought about also applying the metronome then to the slights that you're rehearsing, just as you would normally, of course, when you're reading music.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's good philosophy. Well, listen, I appreciate your time, and so that the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, so I want to ask, what is important to you? What's your philosophy of life? What do you live by? What's your word or words? What's your phrase? You have something you could...
Oh, that's difficult. I think sometimes I say something with have fun with your magic. I will say this in my close-up act later on this day. that is an easy word, but
say in
German.
I think
hab Spaß bei dem, was du machst. So have fun with everything what you are doing.
Something like that.
Yes. The thing is, I did it in my life because trumpet was a hobby.
Yeah.
And magic was a hobby. And now I do both for a living.
That's amazing.
I do my hobbies.
Yeah.
So I'm now 10 years in the same orchestra with a contract. And I will stay there until I will get retired because I have a full-time contract there.
Nice.
I never felt I went to work.
Yeah.
Because I did the same things I did when what I did when I was at school.
And you love
doing it. I go to the youth orchestra, and now I go to a professional orchestra.
Yeah.
And so if you have the ability to do what you like most for a living, then do it. On the other side, I see a lot of young people who dream to be a magician, a professional magician, and they see David Copperfield and Matt King and so people. And they came from school, and they are pretty good. They won different prizes and so on. And then say, I'm now a professional magician.
Yeah.
So I would recommend go to school again or your university and learn something. And if you want to be a magician, do it and learn something what is important for magicians too, like economics or something like that.
Yes.
So because you are, like a self-made... you have a company yourself.
Yeah.
So I think you need always a second leg where you can stand on.
Yeah.
And my heroes are like Alan Jackson or Pat Page or I think even Billy McComb, they had real jobs before they became professional magicians. They did the real jobs and then when they earned the same much money with their magic like their normal job, they could quit the normal job.
Right.
And I would recommend that.
Yeah, so good. Thank you very much, Clemens. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Awfully good talking with you over here then this morning.
Yeah.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Clemens
Ilgner.
This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it is still the third day, and we just finished a lecture with Bizarro and Lynette, and now I am here talking with Anthony Stockton, a young man from the Chicago area. Hi there, Anthony.
Hello.
So, whereabouts, what part of Chicago, actually?
I come from Joliet, Illinois, so the south side of Chicago.
Sure, south side, exactly. I'm from Illinois originally, so I kind of... familiar with the area over there. I really enjoyed your competition act here today. Did you compete last year also?
I have competed for 5 years straight now.
And you're how old?
14 on Saturday.
You'll
so tomorrow.
Oh, well,
so.
Happy birthday early. Okay. And how have you done in the past years? Have you won or finished high or what are you?
I believe 2 years I didn't place. The next 2 years I got second place each, and I hope to get first this year.
Well, I hope you do too. You know, I had voted for you over there before. You know, I'll tell you what you remind me of is the next Rob Zabrecki. You've just kind of got, you know who Rob Zabrecki is?
Not really. With the
okay.
Name.
You just kind of have that personality or vibe a little bit then about you, in which that is kind of. A little bit offbeat, and it seemed like that's what it looks like at your. This is the first time I've seen you perform, but it's kind of some different kinds of things. They're not even just twists on classics. There are some different ideas. How do you come up with your ideas?
Some of the things that I have done, majorly everything I did was manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple things that I got ideas from Dan Sperry.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a lecture at the Aces Magic Club in Chicago, and he had an idea of using this type of material, which just happens to dissolve latex, to pop balloons and do a color-changing balloon. And that gave me the idea, and I decided to put it into my act. And that's how I get the silk from the balls.
Yeah.
So I just kind of roll with it.
Explain that routine, because I thought that was very, very clever.
Yeah. So it starts out, produce the cane, and from the cane comes cards.
Mm-hmm.
I go through all the cards, and it just so happens that I had a balloon at the beginning of the act.
Yeah, you're bouncing this
black
balloon.
Yeah, I'm bouncing a black balloon at the beginning. Music cuts out, I notice the audience. And I decide to try and entertain them, produce the cane, get the cards from the cane. After that, I go through all the cards and remember about the balloon. I pick up the balloon, I bounce it around a little bit, it changes into a yellow balloon.
It popped, I mean, the balloon popped, but it would suddenly change, yeah.
Right.
Different color.
And then I put it inside the hat, I draw a smiley face, that balloon pops and changes into a yellow scarf.
Yeah.
And then I use that yellow scarf in order to get the balls for my ball manipulation part of the act.
You need to look into see who Rob Zabrecki is. Actually, he's, I believe, on the board of directors at the Magic Castle, the Academy of Medical Arts. He's on the cover of Genie and Magazine, and he's very kind of an offbeat, odd kind of a guy, and uses some music. When I heard your music, I thought, well, that's really... Whose music is that, by the way?
That is Kevin MacLeod. It's all royalty-free music.
Yeah. Okay. So. Very odd, very yeah. strange. But your dancing and your moves and the way that you, I thought, he must have studied Rob, and you've never heard of him. It's kind of amazing, his parallel. I'm sorry. But Rob's one of my favorite magicians. He's very, very good. And you do close-up also?
I do a little bit of close-up. I majorly am trying to get more into stage. I only do 3-card tricks right now.
Okay.
But they're good, because I do them a lot.
Well, I'm impressed because it seems like most young people are more involved in wanting to do the stuff, you know, from Illusionist or 311 or whatever, and they're buying the newest and greatest kind of card tricks and everything, but I'm impressed because you're actually doing things on stage. You know, so that's your passion, more the stage rather than close-up.
Right. I want to get into doing more shows for, like, birthday parties and stuff like that, where I can go and I can perform for a crowd instead of, like, only a couple of people.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully that's where my life will take me and do it, and I'll be able to do it as a profession.
Have you started to do some birthday parties already? Or?
I have. I have been able to do that every once in a while. I do have a library show coming up on October 1st in Joliet. So
you might as well hype that. Where's it going to be exactly if you want to see it?
It's going to be at the Joliet Public Library, the main branch downtown Joliet. October 1st.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure what time, so.
Yeah, that sounds great. And that's going to be like a full show, like a half hour. I mean, this was what we saw, of course, was a close-up. I'm sorry, the stage competition was about 8 or 10 minutes, I guess. But how long will your show be?
I believe it's going to be a half hour. And I think balloons, I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. It depends on, we're still kind of working out a couple of details. But
right.
it'll be a 30-minute show with with animals.
Right. Oh, with animals. Yeah. You got doves, rabbits, or are you going to have something like aardvarks and armadillos?
I wish I had an aardvark.
Now, see, by the fact that you even wish you had one shows how strange of a young man that you are, and I'm impressed by that.
Yeah, I'm one of the weirdest people I know. So.
Well, you said you're friends with Dan Sperry, so there you go. Explains it. It's enough said right there.
Right. So I do have a couple of doves. I did have a rabbit. Sadly, it passed away last month. So.
What was the rabbit's name?
It was Gizmo.
Okay.
It was a rescue, so we didn't know how old or anything or how long she would be for.
Yeah.
But right now I just have some doves, and I've been using them in my shows.
And so, again, you're thinking that long-term you'd like to pursue magic as a profession. And in doing that, is there something, I mean, you want to go to college then and you study drama, theater, or acting, or speech, or are you thinking about college, or that far advanced, or what are you thinking?
I do hope to end up in college. I am taking an AP class next year, freshman year. Got an AP class already, and I hope that I can use all of my credits from my AP classes to get to college.
For those who are foreign listeners over in Europe, AP stands for?
Advanced placement. It's essentially a college-level course that high schoolers can take.
And at your age right now, at 13, you would be in what, 6th grade, 7th grade?
I'm going to be a freshman.
Freshman, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Been a long time, I'd forgotten. Okay, good. That'd be about right. Yeah, freshman. Okay. Fantastic. Well, listen, thank you very much. I'm glad you had a chance to chat. And the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so I'm going to ask you now, like, what is important to you? It doesn't have to be a word. What's a phrase? What's your philosophy of life? What do you believe in then right now? What's your magic word or phrase?
Believe in magic.
That's good. I like that. Believe in magic. All right. Well, thank you, Anthony. I appreciate that very much. For The Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.
The thing gets smaller and smaller.
Hey, what's that?
That.
Oh, yes. We're talking. Scott Wells from the Magic Word Podcast. We're talking about my microphone. Yes,
there you
this
go.
Is the Sony. I don't know what this is called, but it's
kind of
a dictaphone. So it's good quality. So
oh, that's awesome.
Because when you're hearing this on the podcast, this is what I'm using.
Cool.
Yeah,
this
is kind of nice. Well, and I'm here with Steve Chesedey. Hello there, Steve.
Hey, what's up?
Well, I'm glad to get to see you here, you know, each year, because you've been working here how many years? 20?
I think 20, 25, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Yeah. It's my home away from home.
Yes, and you look forward to it, I know, every year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great time.
And what do you do exactly? I mean, you have each year, do you do different things? You always do the same thing backstage?
Well, I'm part of the stage crew, yeah. And we've performed here a number of years, too.
Yeah, sure.
So we do the big show. But I'm behind the scenes. I'm mainly there behind the curtain, making sure the acts are set, you know, and if something goes wrong, I'm right there. So, you know, I'm going to catch you if you fall. You know,
yeah,
that kind of
that's
thing.
Always good. You guys have like a—I don't mean like an emergency kit or the first aid kit—but do you have like things if somebody kind of forgets, like a magic marker or some yarn or something? You guys keep things backstage.
We try to be as prepared as we can.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff comes up all the time. You know, yeah. Somebody forgets this or that,
or they lose that perhaps in the flight when they're coming. You know, and they
or some things you can't fly with.
Yeah.
You know, flammable liquids, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a lot of things
what
that we
animals?
Have to...
Animals? I mean, they can't fly the
animals,
like with
this
doves
is true
and
too.
Rabbits. Sometimes.
Sometimes we have to find people with the doves. Tomorrow we need a girl to fit in a box, so...
Mm-hmm.
So we're still
right
looking.
Size.
Yes, yes, yeah. You know, and that's all part of the game.
And tomorrow night's going to be the closing show.
Yep.
What have been some of the challenges as far as being a stage crew that you worked at? I mean, over the years, there had been some that were...
dealing with some of the egos, so
okay.
That's kind of fun, too. But everybody's been very cool this year, you know, so it's been a pleasure. The acts have been on time, mm-hmm. And boy, we've been out the door, you know, right around 10 o'clock at night,
yeah,
you know,
right
with the
time.
Show at least. I mean, we're still packing things up. But I'm a stickler with time, and I want everything to be on time. Boom, boom, let's go.
Right.
You know.
Because you demand that in your own show, and so you want
to... Yeah. When I'm part of another show, it just drives me nuts. If you tell somebody to do 10 or 15 minutes, and they go on for a half hour, it throws everything off.
Yep.
And a true pro knows their time and sticks to time. And it's, you know, and I've been doing this for a long time. And that would be my advice for some of the youngsters. Stick to your time. Don't play games.
Right.
You know, stick with the program.
Well, some of the young guys are still trying to learn what their time is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't plan for laughter and applause or, you know.
Sure, but, you know.
Or they think, hey, this is going well. I think I'll try something else. And they keep adding more stuff into it.
Yeah, you know, I understand that. But do that in your little shows, not on the big stage.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, you put your time in, but don't experiment on the big show.
Who have been some of the acts that have been, let's say, I don't know, memorable acts? Somebody that, I mean, I know you like Harry Blackstone Jr. and some of the others that you had, but I mean, it probably is unfair to all the rest of the acts, but those at least that immediately come to mind.
You know, well, it's interesting because backstage from where I'm working, it's a different show.
Exactly,
I mean,
yeah.
But, you know, I do enjoy the comedy acts, and, you know, if somebody's going to make me laugh, that's wonderful.
Like Jeff Hobson or Michael Finney.
Oh, yeah. Oh, those guys are awesome. Oh, I love Finney and Hobson. I mean, you know, my buddy Dan Sperry does an awesome job, too.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, like you mentioned, Harry Blackstone Jr., Thursday was his night here, and I miss seeing him. He was, he was something else.
Thursday night was Blackstone night, typically?
It really was.
What did he do? What made that special?
You know, I'm not sure why it was Thursday, but I remember I had to switch up with him one year, and he asked me if he could do Wednesday, and I would fill in for him on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something with his schedule. But it's also nice to have a good draw on a Wednesday or Thursday to bring the people in.
Right. Rather than waiting for just the Friday or Saturday show.
Right, yeah. But, you know, obviously our crowds get bigger on Friday and Saturday, but
you
want to have a good draw for Wednesday or Thursday. This way you bring the people in and they stay, you know, here at the convention. But we've got a good turnout. It's a little toasty this year, but we've got, you know, it's cloudy. But
it rained this morning, that kind of blew things.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit cooler now. It's 101 downtown. I saw in Curly's yesterday.
No.
I took a picture of it.
It was?
If you go to the website and see, I took a picture of it. It said Blackstone Avenue right above it. It said 101.
Oh, I can't believe that. It was that hot?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it was toasty, but I didn't realize it was that hot.
Yep. Well, what about other challenges? Let's say that, you know, as far as trying to get some illusions, I mean, some guys think, I'm going to bring it. I mean, like Franz Ferrari, you know.
Oh, my God.
Or somebody bring in stuff.
Well, there was one time Brett Daniels wanted to make a car appear on stage, and I think it got stuck in the hallway. So I don't think that ever happened. But
right
yeah.
now he's stuck trying to get Chris Angel called out.
Oh, oh my God. Oh my God. I saw all that.
You see the video?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh man, Brett
Part
scares
one and
me.
Two. Yeah.
He scares me. I wouldn't want to be I wouldn't want him on my
On the other hand, I've
side.
Heard people talking about and saying, you know, that Chris is a stronger guy than you think he is. I mean, he may look kind of wiry, but he probably would beat up on Brett. That could be a good matchup. This is never gonna happen,
what?
But
no,
it's
no,
good
no,
to speculate.
Nah, yeah, Brett's a big dude.
He is, no question.
I wouldn't want to mess with him.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah.
And, you know, sure, Chris has got some meat on him, but I wouldn't want to mess with Brett.
So he was trying to make a car appear.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it never happened. Couldn't get it through there.
No, I don't think so. I just remember getting stuck in this hallway here. We couldn't get it in, so... It couldn't magically appear on the stage if we couldn't get it in the door.
Well, that's what they always say, so. You know, that can you make a rabbit out of the hat? Well, it has to start in the hat to begin with before you can make it come out of the hat.
Well, something like that. But I remember we were stuck. We were at Diagonal, and it was crazy. But we've, you know, had that. We've had different challenges. I think last year we had the smoke alarm went off. John Bundy set that off. They went a little heavy on the fog machine, and we had the...
The fire department come?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's all part of the game. Not too many years ago, we had a bad storm coming through, and we had to be prepared to evacuate this whole building. Hmm. I mean, we had some, well, I mean, or where to put, you know, 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously the gym is a very unsafe, but we had, like, tornadoes coming this way.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was scary. But
so they shut down the show early? I mean, they closed it?
You know, I think it blew over or just went south, but, boy, we were watching the radar, and, you know, I mean, these are all things that you have to take into account when you have a big group of people and you want to keep everyone safe, but we've had an excellent track record, and we're going to keep it going.
Never had to cancel a show or anything, as far as you know, or something that didn't happen, or someone die on stage.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Don't say that. Oh, my God. Oh, you're killing me.
Okay, I'm not going to say Macbeth back there or anything.
You know, well, this is kind of a weird one, but this one had me nervous.
Okay.
We had... John Calvert was celebrating his 100th birthday here, and he insisted on performing that night. And I think he was doing the Dancing Handkerchief.
Casper, yeah.
I believe so. And Mark, who is our stage manager, came to me and he goes, "Your job is to catch him."
Oh.
And I'm like, "Dang it." And I was like, but he was serious. He wasn't joking.
Yeah.
I was just inches away from him at any point on the stage, you know, just in case he stumbled or whatnot.
Sure.
But it was very nerve-wracking. But we brought in the traveler so that I was just off sight, and I was, you know, just a few feet away if he stumbled. But he went through it. Everything was fine. But, boy, that was nerve-wracking. I was, oh, my God. Oh, that was scary.
No, I've heard stories of people. It seems like Walter Blaney told me once before, where there was a guy who was actually his announcing him. Maybe it was like at a corporate affair or something.
Oh, okay.
And the guy was, you know, Walter's in the wings over there with his lasso getting ready, you know, you know. And so the guy said, "Just give a big warm welcome to our magician this evening, Walter Blaney."
Oh my God, really?
They dropped like that, and Walter's coming out that. What's going on? You know,
that is scary. Well, you know what?
And he died, and they said, "We're going to stop the show."
Oh my God!
Before he started.
Yeah. No, we've had. You know, good luck here, and everybody's healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? This last year, for instance, I get to spend a lot of time with the acts backstage.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's obviously a privilege, and I've got to know some of these people over the years. Tom Mullica was here just last year.
Yeah.
And I spent time with him, and we chat, you know, just day-to-day stuff.
Right.
And it's very sad he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just another one of those things that just...
Well, Hank Morehouse. I remember going out on the cemetery tour, and he already had his headstone over there.
Yeah,
and
no, it's creepy.
Yeah,
but
it was, and I remember him laying down there, and his wife was taking a picture of him on top of the ground.
Yeah.
And like within a few weeks later, you know,
he's then gone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all part of life.
Yeah.
And we get our time, and you just make the best of it. And
yeah.
Speaking of that, I turned 50. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I remember that. Now, didn't you and do a show in Florida?
Yes, we had. It was something that just fell into place. My birthday was May 23rd. It was a Monday night.
Yep.
And I was like, you know what? Monday night, that's Wizards Magic Theater in Florida.
So you and Michael Trix?
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Let's book that. we'll do that. Michael Trix heard about it, and he goes, I got to open for you. So Michael Trix opened up for me, and it was a big deal. It was the Rocking Birthday Bash.
Yeah.
So it was my 50th birthday party. It sold out. We had all the magicians from Florida there. And what I didn't know is they snuck in a couple of my friends, Dan Sperry and his wife, and my little friend Jessica Peterson from the Terry Evanswood show. Mm-hmm. She drove 10 hours that day just to be with us. And right before I was going on, they opened up the side door and they brought them in. They snuck them in. And I'm like, dang it, what are you guys doing here? You know, I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, you know, I was just dumbfounded. And then they're like, and you're on. Let's go. And I was just like, what do you got? So I was just, I was kind of taken back. But I was like, they flew in. Jesse flew, you know, drove all day. But then they came in. And then we spent the next couple of days at Disney and Universal. And boy, we had a ball.
I saw all those pictures on Facebook.
My God.
It seemed like every minute you were posting something.
Oh, yeah. But I was like, there were 10 of us there on Tuesday. And we hit the parks, you know, running. And we did so many things. It's all a blur because it all happened so fast. But it was, you know, it was a great way to spend my 50th birthday. Yeah. I mean, because I worked. And then, you know, I was just playing like a kid as usual. We did all the rides and Tower of Terror, and but except Sperry did not make it on the Rock and Roller Coaster. He bailed out on us. He doesn't like the coasters. I don't mean to point that
out. So there is something that he is afraid of.
Oh, my God. Oh, we're talking about the biggest scaredy cat of all. It's all an act. Oh, my God. I can't even go into it.
You know, when you see a guy like that that's tatted and everything, and you think, okay, he can withstand anything.
It's an act. No. He's a phony. He doesn't like scary movies. I got to hold his hand to go on the rides. Oh, my God. He kills me.
It's funny.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for being a stage manager each year and all the work that you do, because you make these things look seamless. I've been to so many other conventions, and it seems, of course, the guys with the stagehands are...
Oh, my God. You know what? That's an excellent point. I'm part of the stage crew. Mark is our stage manager, but the stage manager keeps the show together like glue, because we did a show not too long ago where it wasn't put together by someone who knew what they were doing, and it can make all the difference in the world. You can be a pro act, but you know, you still got to have somebody in charge.
But that continuity from year to year also.
Oh, my
God. You guys, you know, working together.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We work like we're a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know it. We know it before the act knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. If they need help, we're there. Stage manager and the crew make all the difference in the world between, you know, a first-class show and an amateur production. So,
well, have you changed your magic word? Are you still, give me a...
Oh, my God.
What's your magic word, okay? Or your magic phrase?
Oh, my God. What did I say last time? Oh, be proud of your work. But I'm still... That's still very
more
important.
We need more stock.
Oh, stock. Yeah, that's right. Invest your money. That's right.
Buy low, sell high.
Yeah. No. Actually, you know what? That's kind of funny, but I do tell my young friends, you know, put your money away. Mm-hmm. You know, if you work hard...
Oh, yeah.
I think we just talked about this privately, my dad instilled in me, make your money work for you, put your money away while you can, you know, don't spend beyond your means. I mean, it's very important to look into the future, I mean, especially now that I'm in my 50s, which is funny.
Yeah, that is funny
it's scary.
Soon you'll be AARP.
Oh my God. No, you know, I haven't even seen that yet, but no, it's weird. I'm very proud of my age. I still got all my hair, I still got most of my teeth, so I'm all set. But yeah, no, just, you know, be proud of your work.
Good.
Have fun, and you know, just get out there and do it.
And do it. Yeah, like Nike.
There you go.
Very good.
Just do it.
For the Magic Word Podcast, this is my good buddy and a friend of the Magic Word. Thank you very much, Steve Chesedey.
Cool. I'll be listening. I listen every day on my walk, man. Every day.
Thank
you're
you.
You're awesome.
All right, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this the evening show is over for day three. It's starting to kind of come to a conclusion. It's about 11 o'clock here, and we are at the Allegiant, and I happen to run across Dave Cressy. Hey, David, how are you?
Who's he?
It has been a very long time. You haven't been at a convention in a while that I've seen. I mean, I think I go to a lot of conventions, but I've not seen you in any for a while.
I haven't been at an Abbott's or a convention probably in 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Well, you've been working, making hat coils and mouth coils and paper.
No. No, I haven't.
Really? I figured you kind of gave all that up. What are you doing now? And for those of you, by the way, who are out there listening around the world that who don't know who Dave Cressy is, with Cressy's mouth coils and things, that we're going to get into that. I just want to see about the millions of those you made. But what have you been doing the last 3 years?
Last 3 years, taking care of my wife.
What?
Having a good time with my wife.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. Traveling. Yeah. We both ride on a motorcycle. She loves motorcycles.
Yeah.
I bought a new one.
Well,
two
you're here by
ago.
Accident because there's this is Sturgis, Michigan, not
no,
Sturgis,
no, no, no.
South Dakota.
Okay. Sturgis, yes. No, I'm here in Colon, Michigan.
Okay. Yeah.
None of the Sturgises. Yeah. It was time for me to come back.
Yeah.
It was touch and go the past 2 or 3 years.
Health wise?
For one reason or another.
Okay.
And. Finally, I said, well, I have to see how this is going to work out.
Yeah.
So, and it's great.
Good, good. That is, everybody be glad to hear that. So all is well, and you're going to be starting to hit the magic scene again, just kind of making appearances and just like this, kind of attending.
I really don't know. You know, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
I'll always come up here if I can.
How many of these get-togethers have you been attending? I mean, I just talked with David Lindsell, and that he is celebrating his 50th attendance. Oh. So I don't know. I mean, this is my fifth. So
I think I did. I want to say roughly between maybe 30 and 32.
Okay.
Somewhere in that area.
And do you stay in one of the homes down here? You kind of got and have a good relationship, or you have to stay like in Sturgis or Coldwater or someplace?
Yeah,
or?
I stayed in a lot of homes here.
Okay.
Yeah, the last one we stayed at, we were there for about 15 years, and the husband passed away, and then last year there, matter of fact, our last year there, my last year there, his wife passed away.
Okay.
Her name was Doris Malcolm. Mm-hmm. And they lived about 6 houses down from Abbott's.
Okay.
And that's how we got in there. We got in there through Debbie, Debbie Bordner, and there was Bob and I, and a couple of other guys. And we had a great relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
are you saying they're still in that same house?
No, or? Now we're out somewhere on a lake. I don't know which one.
Okay.
It's in a house. It's a monstrous house, and it has one little air conditioner.
So you try to stay close to that air conditioning on that day. So going back, as far as some of the hat tears, paper coils and all that, did you sell the business to somebody who's handling that now, or what's the deal?
I sold it to a kid named John Reed.
John Reed, okay.
Who for about 2 or 3 years did extremely well. And then the paper companies went up on price drastically, to the point where I couldn't have afforded what they did to him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it must have been fairly inexpensive at one point, because I remember so well attending some early conventions when you used to just take handfuls and throw them out into the audience during the dealer show and saying they were free.
That was advertising.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
It was a lot cheaper than grabbing an ad in any of the trade magazines.
Yeah.
So you go to any convention, you throw maybe $100, $150, $200 worth of coils. You know, all kinds of junk, stuff that you know is never going to sell again.
Yeah.
And you just get rid of it. Give it to the audience. Let them have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was goodwill in some respects, but it was mostly advertising in other respects.
Uh-huh. Right. But the price of paper and everything's gone up, so it really hasn't been quite as lucrative for that guy.
It's been drastic.
I wonder if the Chinese have started doing that inexpensively also, like some other things that have been kind of ripped off or made. Or
yeah, their rice paper has gone up drastically, too.
Mm, okay.
There's a company around. I won't mention the name, but there's a company around I told John to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Right now he's working on a one in New York, and there's one or two others. that I told them to investigate. I'm going to try and investigate it myself and see what I can come up with. I told him to see what he can come up with. Because he's having a lot of problems, not only with paper, but with scotch tape.
Yeah.
Tape is at a premium.
So the tape is almost more expensive than what the paper is, huh?
At times, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, all those were handmade. I mean, those weren't machine-made, right?
One at a time.
Yeah. That's amazing.
One at a time.
And how long would it take you to make a mouth coil? I mean, when you got it down, I mean, was it just seconds, minutes, half hour?
Nothing going on yet. Everybody's
probably a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Okay.
But you have to understand, the paper came in reams. Mm-hmm. So you had to stack this. Then you had to collate it all of it.
Yeah.
Then after that, you had to ship it out to girls who were going to roll it in their homes.
Okay.
So every week I'd go out and pick up and drop off and pick up.
And this was around your house?
Within a 50-mile range.
Yeah, okay. And you lived in Ohio? Or where?
We lived in Everett, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, that's right. Yeah. West Coast. Or East Coast, yeah.
And get it back to the shop, trim all the rolls, cut down all the pieces. I could sometimes cut, depending on what kind of a day it was, up to maybe 30,000-40,000 pieces a day.
Wow. Okay.
And then I'd have to do a certain procedure to each one of the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd give it to the girls. The girls would fold, tape it. I'd get it back. I'd trim it. The girls would get it back. They'd package it, put the instructions in, seal the packages.
Yeah.
Put them in crates and get them out. And yeah. This is a weekly thing. I mean, this is when we had a great system.
So you kind of got out at the right time, it sounds like.
I don't like to put it that way.
Okay.
I got out because I couldn't do it anymore.
Physically?
I was getting severe arthritis in both of my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So before I broke my rotocuffs, I thought it was better to either do one of three things. Run it into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Dump it or sell it.
Right.
So I sent 12 letters out to various people. I got two answers. One got caught in a snowstorm, and the other said it's too labor intensive.
Hmm.
And it was.
Yeah.
So I didn't do anything about it. I was just going to run it into the ground.
Yeah.
I got a call about 2 weeks later from a kid named John Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And he was already in the paper business. He was making throw streamers.
Okay.
He was making snowstorms in China.
Okay.
And he says, I want to buy your business. I said, John, you could steal it.
Mm-hmm.
He says, that's not the point. He says, I want the name.
Yeah.
I want the Cressy
coils.
Name.
Yeah.
So I says, okay. So he says, what do you want for it? So I gave him a price. He says, I'll get back to you in 2 weeks. 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by. He called me. He says, I can only come up with so much money.
Mm-hmm.
I says, yeah. He says, could I owe you the rest? I says, sure. He says, how do you want to do it? I says, how do you want to do it?
Yeah.
He says, do you want lawyers or accountants?
Or just
handshakes? I
says,
no. I says, he says, how about a handshake? I said, how about a handshake?
Uh-huh.
And he says, yeah, all right. So I says, well, anytime you're ready, come on up. He came up on a Monday. We shook hands. He gave me a couple of bucks. I gave him the keys. I was on my way out the door. He said, where are you going? I said,
yours. I'm
going to go to the bank. Put the money in the bank.
Yeah.
You should trust me here. I said, yeah, you own it.
Yeah.
2 days later, we loaded up the truck. There must have been. He got, I can't tell you what he got. I mean, he got stuff that was paper that was that I had for years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, all specialty papers.
Yeah.
And really, a lot of, and it cost a fortune for some of these specialty papers. But I gave it to him. It was part of the deal. Right? Loaded up the truck, walked in the shop. The shop had a desk, a chair, and a ladder. And I sat there for half an hour crying my eyes out, saying, what the hell did I do?
Yeah. Gave away your baby. You have to let go. Let
what
it take wings and go, you know?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
Yeah, it was.
So now you got on your motorcycle and took off, and now you're living the life.
No. It wasn't that quick.
Okay, took a while. So some time passed.
Yeah, time passed, and And I said, I told her I was going to buy a bike. I think I bought the bike before we sold the business. I think I had the bike before we sold the business. And that was the first one. We're working on the third one now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Harleys?
All Harleys.
Yeah.
Electroglides, Ultra Limited, big machine, all electronic.
Nice.
It is.
Nice. Well, listen, I've taken enough of your time. I said it's going to be a few minutes, and you've given me a lot of stories. And that when you developed this early on, one last thing I was going to ask you, that how did you get into it? I mean, what made you think of this idea?
Wow. I was on workman's compensation.
Okay.
Like I heard on the job. During that course of time, I had like six operations, and I settled with the insurance company. But in between, I was working for a guy named, two guys. One, his name was Jimmy Reno, from Simplex Magic in Medford, Massachusetts. Hell of a nice guy. And the other guy was Ray Goulet, from Watertown, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts, yeah.
So I used to go from Jimmy's to Ray's, Jimmy's to Ray's, and I would never carry stories back and forth. Never.
Okay.
Although
you could have.
I could have. But during that course of time, I was making coils for myself, and Jimmy said
for your own shows.
Oh, no, just for myself, my own personal use for doing shows.
Yeah.
And Jimmy says, those are nice. He said, you ought to put them on the market. And I said, what market? He says, magicians. He says, you know.
And what year would this have been, 68, 70?
We went into business in 70, was it 74? I think it was 74.
All right.
But this is prior to it. This is probably around between 68 and 74.
Yeah.
And along the way, I was making coils. I was making it out of pastel papers. And then he said, you should get something brighter. So I investigated it and found out that this company, Crystal Tissue in Ohio, manufactured all of these mattress tissues.
Mm-hmm.
Various colors on each sheet. There's probably two or three different colors on each sheet. And the spectrum of colors was just endless.
Yeah.
So I went to them, and I was able to buy, like, cases at a time. And I used to have it on our sun porch in the house. And one day my wife said to me, you have to get this out of here. I want it out of my house.
Yeah.
So she rented me 250 square feet for $125 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my God, how am I going to pay this bill?
Yeah.
I had no idea how I was going
to.
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Now we had to work. Mm-hmm. And everything just kind of like fell into place. I was making, at one point in time, while I'm making coils, Jimmy also talked me into making spring flowers.
Okay.
So I had a spring flower business going. So between the spring flowers, spring bills, flowers at fingertips, various other spring things, and coils, we're going crazy. I got to the point, I said, I got to get rid of the spring flower business. So I called Danny Tong. I said, how would you like a spring flower business? He says, what is it? I told him. He says, how much? I told him the price. He says, wow. So he got like triple the amount of material for the amount of money he gave me.
Yeah. Wow.
That was great. And then after I got into the mouth coils, I got into throat streamers. Now, throat streamers, that was another whole different thing.
Yeah.
Looking for machines to cut that stuff is unbelievable.
Yeah, pretty fine.
Yeah, just crazy. Just absolutely nuts. It's been a good life. I if it wasn't for the magic business, I don't know what I'd be doing today.
Well, that kind of leads me to my wrapping question, and that is, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so what would be your phrase? What's your philosophy of life? Wouldn't have to be a word. It could be a phrase. What do you live by? What you said you've had a magic life, but what's your advice? What do you
be nice
by?
Be nice to your wife.
Be nice to your wife. That's good advice. Sure is.
Love her, cherish her, and never lie to her.
Yeah.
And do anything she asks you to do.
And you've been married how many years?
55 years.
We've been married 41, so we're on our way. Congratulations. Thank you,
Dave,
very much.
To you. Thank you.
All right. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Dave Cressy, and this is Scotty out.